This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. America's use of torture since 9/11 has come under attack from many quarters. Several military experts say it's not effective. But for Christian ethicist David Gushee, the very question of efficacy is a degrading one. He believes that the usefulness of an action does not influence its morality. Gushee's part of a non-governmental bipartisan task force on detainee treatment. That task force released a report last year on U.S.-sponsored torture in the war on terror. A Senate committee is expected to release a similar report later this summer. It's right now being reviewed, redacted, and declassified by the CIA. David Gushee speaks tonight in Raleigh about renouncing torture and ethical concerns. David, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Tell us about this task force, because you joined a task force on detainee treatment, and it was, in fact, a kind of non-governmental bipartisan group, right?
Right. It was organized by the Constitution Project, which is a rule of law organization based in Washington. They do great work on whatever they do. And they were able to put together, ended up being an 11-member nonpartisan or bipartisan panel with some recognizable names, Republican and Democrat. And we researched with staff help this issue for several years and released a report last spring. And I'm looking at it now, 600 pages. It's the most exhaustive study other than the Select Committee on Intelligence report, which we're waiting to have declassified.
All right. So and it sort of got at, and I don't know how controversial it was or whether or not there was even an argument over whether the U.S. was using torture. But in fact, this commission found that people were being, detainees were being tortured.
The number one finding of the report is that it is unequivocal that the United States used torture rather widely in multiple theaters after 9/11.
It's kind of interesting when it comes to this word torture, because you'll see various presidents, President Obama, President Bush before him, sort of talking about this in legal terms. And so they will say, as long as they followed the law, it isn't torture, because by definition, everything beyond the law is torture and everything within the law is what we do to extract information. And so both Bush and Obama have said that if we do it and it's legal, it's not torture and everything beyond that. So what's our definition of torture? I guess that's maybe the first question.
Well, I actually brought it so that you could see how our listeners could hear how the United States has defined torture. Under the torture statute of 1994, it is an intentional act committed by a person acting under the color of law that inflicts severe physical or mental pain or suffering, other than pain or suffering incidental to lawful sanctions, upon another person within his custody or physical control. And then that is distinguished from a somewhat less severe category called cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. So you can be prosecuted under U.S. law for either of these. And we concluded that the United States actually violated its own laws after 9/11 in inflicting torture, and not just cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment on many people that were under our control.
And of course, before we get to the ethical questions that we certainly want to talk about, it seems to me that the problem you have is the subjective nature of that definition.
It's hard. What is severe physical or mental pain or suffering? And what happened during the Bush administration is lawyers in the Office of Legal Counsel of the Justice Department in the first 2 years after 9/11 issued a series of now infamous memos providing counsel to their president that have now been discredited. In fact, they were discredited by 2003, late, that narrowed the definition of torture, and especially severe physical and mental pain and suffering, such that the president apparently believed that what his people were doing under his orders was not torture. But nobody outside of the leaders of that administration in that period and those particular lawyers believes that that was a legitimate understanding of the law. And so it reveals catastrophic failure on the part of lawyers advising the president, which contributed to the disastrous policies that were implemented.
Well, but this brings us to the difference between a lawyer and an ethicist, right? I mean, the question is that lawyers tell presidents what they can do, and an ethicist, we would hope, would tell a president what he should do.
Well, I would dissent in this sense that other lawyers working for the Office of Legal Counsel later as well as the Office of Professional Responsibility in the Justice Department, concluded that those lawyers in 2002 and 2003 did not do their legal work well. So it wasn't just an ethical issue. It was bad lawyering. And one of the there's a set of recommendations in our report related to how the Office of Legal Counsel can be overseen and can revise its practices so that that never happens again.
And how would they do that?
Essentially, one of the things we said is that the judgments or legal opinions offered by the Office of Legal Counsel should be, in principle, public. Maybe not immediately public, but eventually public, so that there would be a level of public oversight. You know, those people writing those opinions would know that at least the judgment of history would be brought to bear on what they were doing.
Well, and the public part of it, I think, is important because some of the rule changes and some of the reasons that we got to a tighter definition over time had to do with the release of photographs from Abu Ghraib, did they not?
Yes. At the time, that was 2004, and those terrible pictures from Abu Ghraib, where we were originally told was just an aberration as some you know, bored or immoral you know, service members on the night shift went a little crazy. But we now know that what happened at Abu Ghraib was kind of the tip of the iceberg related to the broad spread of abuse and mistreatment of detainees. It happened in Afghanistan first. It happened in Iraq. It happened in Guantanamo. And it happened at dozens of what we now are calling what were called black sites all around the world, where the CIA especially was taking detainees and mistreating them.
What do you think, as an ethicist, what is our responsibility to those people who we, for that subset of the population who we've arrested, who we in good faith do think have information that's valuable to us, in a very dangerous situation where our national security and the lives and safety of particularly service personnel are at stake? How do we ethically treat those people who we have in our custody?
We adhere to the longstanding and effective military traditions of our country, the carefully codified policies that you can find in the Army Field Manual that direct interrogations on the part of the military. We don't allow any branch of the U.S. government to have different rules to play by, which is what happened with the CIA. They had a gloves were off kind of policy, and things really got out of hand. We have confidence that that skillful interrogation techniques that have worked in the past can work today, and that we don't need to violate our own laws and values in order to gain some illusory benefit, which we, you know, our report says that there is no persuasive evidence that we gain any benefit at all using these other techniques. And so we lost morally, we lost international credibility for no particular benefit.
And your report finds that, but there have been a number of experts within the military and intelligence community who have testified before Congress and elsewhere that it's a bad way to get information, that you'll get information, but it may or may not be useful because somebody will tell you anything.
People will tell you anything under torture. Now, we very carefully say it is possible that information was extracted under torture that had some value here and there, but also that plenty of information we know was extracted that had no value. And, you know, people saying anything to, you know, signing anything, saying anything to end torture. And so that sent people on wild goose chases that were of no value. And it's interesting that the gains that were supposedly won through these techniques, most of the time those details are kept secret. So it goes like this. We had all these tremendous intelligence scores, but we can't tell you about them. Just trust us. And that's not how our government needs to operate.
Let's listen to George Bush. He was asked about this very question on Fox News, and he claims to this very day that he did get actionable information. Again, there has been no verifiable reports that there was much good information that came from it. But according to him, it did. And here's his response to torture and why the U.S. used it and why he authorized it.
The American people have got to know that what we did in the past gained information that prevented an attack. And for those who criticize what we did in the past, I ask them, which attack would they rather have not stopped? Which attack on America did they, you know, would they have said, well, maybe it wasn't all that important that we stopped those attacks? And I'll do what's necessary to protect America within the law. That's what you got to understand.
That's George Bush on Fox News. I'm talking with David Gushee, who's a professor of Christian ethics at Mercer, and he's also here to talk about our ethical responsibility in the war on terror. There's a lot in there, isn't there? First of all, the premise that he got information, which, again, has not been verified.
Now, if we can get the Select Committee, Senate Select Intelligence Committee report through the CIA declassification grid and released, my understanding is that we will have the most thorough examination of that question that has ever been done. And so that needs to happen. It was interesting to hear the passion in his voice. He and Vice President Cheney and others will go to their graves defending what they did. And they, in some ways, are the best positioned to tell us, but in some ways they're the worst positioned because their historical reputations are at stake. They, in a sense, they have no objectivity whatsoever to be able to defend those claims, and they need to be adjudicated by impartial assessment. And so show us the evidence and let's see that impartial assessment. Obviously, no American wants a terrorist attack to happen on the United States. It's never – there's no city that we don't care about. There's no attack that doesn't matter. But there's no persuasive evidence released to date to say that torture, you know, saved any particular lives. And meanwhile, it's interesting the note of within the law. I think I've already tried to make clear that the law was gutted in how it was interpreted by the Office of Legal Counsel lawyers, so that what within the law meant in that statement is not what anybody else would understand within the law to mean.
But it also suggests, and President Obama has taken the same approach, that I'm going to follow the law, which suggests that there's no real ethical foundation here. I will adjust to whatever the law allows, and that's the point. That's my new ceiling, and I'm going there.
Properly understood, the rule of law has an ethical dimension to it. Good law reflects good ethics. Bad law reflects bad ethics. There is a dimension of right and wrong that can never be fully captured in the law. And so when we talk about American values, kind of the American soul, those are some ways that I and others have used to get at that dimension that cannot fully be captured by the law. What kind of people are we? What kind of way do we want to relate to people in the world? How do we want to be looked at as a country? What kind of activities do we want our soldiers and intelligence people doing in our name? When you ask questions like that, it kind of gets at the moral dimension a little bit better than just what the laws are.
Moral dimension, and in this case, a religious dimension. You're a professor of Christian ethics. Do I have to be a Christian in order to subscribe to this? How does this become a broader public policy debate about who we are as a people?
I think that for me as a Christian, there are specific theological commitments that have helped to inform, you know, my activism on this issue and have helped to keep me immovable when others were compromising, you might say, on hey, torture might be okay some of the time. I think that's a very dangerous place to go. I mean, in our law and in our treaty obligations, torture is never permitted under any circumstances. Religion can play a role in buttressing the firmness of that commitment. For me, it has to do with the dignity of every human being made in God's image, regardless of what we think they may or may not have done. But the people who have worked on the torture issue have been people of various faiths and no particular faith. I've been inspired to know people who are motivated on this issue out of military traditions, the honor of the military, or out of legal traditions, the rule of law, human rights traditions, grounded philosophically, perhaps, various religious traditions, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, and other. The coalition on this issue has been secular and religious, philosophical, legal, national. It's actually given me a lot of hope that we have moral traditions that still survive in this country that can help us stay on the right track.
A Christian ethicist speaks out against torture on the state of things. I'm talking with David Gushee, who speaks tonight in Raleigh and is on our program today. You know, there's a kind of an interesting prototype for this in the Bible. I mean, I'm thinking about Abraham's negotiation with God over Sodom and Gomorrah. It seems to me a kind of way in which we can give ourselves permission to have these debates. I mean, here's Abraham. God is about to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah because of their selfishness and materialism. They've taken their own personal comfort to a high art. He's going to destroy both towns. Abraham says, look, it's your creation. You do what you want. I'm paraphrasing. He says, it's your creation. You do what you want. But you know, I mean, suppose you found 50 good people. You wouldn't want to. And the God says, well, 50 good people. And then 45. And he negotiates. And he ultimately gets to 10 good people. It shows that apparently, no matter how difficult, even in negotiating with the Creator itself, you can ultimately say, well, we have a stake in this. We can talk about who we are as a people.
That's great. That's a great story to bring in. I had not thought of that in application to this issue. I mean, one of the things that that story says is that life matters. And life is to be preserved if possible. And you give the benefit of the doubt to the innocent. And one of the things that people often forget is how many people we mistreated, abused, or tortured who were not guilty of anything. One of the former commanding generals at Guantanamo says that he's convinced that at least half the people that had at Guantanamo weren't guilty of anything. And you put that fact together with the standard policy of mistreatment that went on for a while, the U.S. has never come to terms with, apologized for, or made restitution to hundreds and hundreds of people who we mistreated who weren't guilty of anything. And now when some of these people are suing us, the U.S. government is blocking those lawsuits from proceeding on the basis of state secrets. We can't reveal that information. And that is under the Obama administration.
Well, and this president has sort of created this kind of retroactive justification for drone attacks, saying we will only kill enemy combatants, and if you happen to be in the presence of an enemy combatant and killed, you are, by our new legal definition, an enemy combatant.
Or at least collateral damage that we're not going to do anything about. There are broader issues here related to, are we really under the rule of law anymore? And does national security trump everything? And is there public oversight of what our government is doing? I mean, the broad trend one could identify is that really since World War II, we have witnessed the growth of an expansive national security bureaucracy that includes the CIA but goes well beyond, that the average American has very, very limited oversight of or even knowledge of what it is doing. And all of that power is concentrated in the hands of the executive branch. And we show in our report that both the judiciary and the legislative branches offered relatively weak checks and balances to the power of the executive. This needs to be considered as part of our reflections on where we are as a country.
And well, let's get back to transparency, because I think we have indicated that when Americans see what we're talking about, torture in the abstract, particularly for those people who did something horrible to us, may be one thing. But when we see the evidence of it in the photographs, we have a different response. And so transparency and allowing us to see what we're doing, the evidence of that, could go a long way to holding people accountable, would you say?
It really could. One of the things that was really striking to me is you get these clinical legal language in these Office of Legal Counsel reports. You are permitted to drop the temperature to this degree in combination with this amount of water dousing, in combination with this amount of shackling, and it sounds clinical and clean. But then when you actually read like the Red Cross report that was leaked and we know what actually happened, we brutalized people. And anybody of conscience, it did shock the conscience. And when you read about it, I think we've been trying to hide from direct encounter with what we actually did because it is shameful. But transparency makes it harder for us to hide. And transparency can help us get past this, to renounce it and not go there again.
David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
David Gushee, a professor of Christian ethics at Mercer University, going to speak tonight, 7 o'clock, Pullen Baptist Church in Raleigh. More information at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the dark side of fairy tales poetically rendered. Stay tuned.